Dough, and don't be slow. 9 o'clock is when the band starts to hit. Stop right dead in your tracks. Drop it and don't look back.
Roll.
No time to stroll.
If it gets too hot, stop, drop, and roll.
First we stop off at the Shim Sham, a little place across the track. She drop all the flim flam, and everybody loves the jack. When she cut down on the snake hip, she said, yeah, you're right. But when she start to giggle, starts to charm and wiggle, she keeps on popping till the frog legs and lights.
That's the Squirrel Nut Zippers on Stay Human. It's our weekly hour of words and music for spirit and courage. On today's show, we'll be featuring a conversation with one of the Catholic workers who were arrested this week in Itasca County for trespassing onto the property of Enbridge Incorporated. We'll also hear from Steve Downing on the temples of the moneylenders, and we'll take a look forward from Standing Rock.
It's too hot, stop, drop, and roll.
Let it roll.
Stop, drop, roll.
If it gets too hot.
I'm Michael Goldberg, and I'm going to let it roll here with a song from Paul Thorne.
You son, you don't have to win to
I had a really good day helping out a friend earlier this week. Not that it took much, mostly just waiting around, making sure he knew that I was there for him, and some help setting him up so he could get home. He lives a couple hundred miles away. He had had a really crappy weekend. That story is his to tell, not mine. Suffice to say, nothing went the way he had expected. But for me, the chance to be useful was a gift, as being useful often is, not just for the general reciprocity of it, we all depend on each other and there really is no me without you, but also because it makes making decisions so much easier once you commit. It's not what do I do or what do I want or what are my choices, just what do you need? And with this particular old friend, it gave me a chance to pay off a long-standing karmic debt. See, one winter night 40 years ago, I was driving the back roads, a Volkswagen Bug, I'm pretty sure it was. I was definitely going too fast around that one corner, right into the ditch. It was cold out and dark, and that car wasn't going anywhere. But we realized we were only a mile or two away from the home of some new friends we'd recently met. We'd been to their house when we moved to the neighborhood. So we hiked up their long road, up their long driveway, knocked on their door, and changed their plans for the evening. He gets his clothes back on, gets his truck started, gets the VW out of the ditch, and then brings us home to feed and warm us before we turn around and slowly drive home. So when he was searching the other day for words to express his gratitude, I told him this story and said, "Buddy, for 40 years, this debt has been a burden to me, thinking I could never repay you, so good, now we're even." He had no cash, but he still had his bank card, so I took him to the Wells Fargo ATM drive-thru. Isn't America great? You just drive up to a machine that gives you money? He had to explain to me where to put in his card and how to respond to the series of prompts, and he said, "What, have you never used an ATM?" "Sure," I said, "but at a different bank, and I don't speak Wells Fargo." "Do you know that bank? They're the ones whose logo is an old-time stagecoach with the driver whipping the team of horses to go faster. Never did like that bank, even before all the scandals. Always seems to me that, as far as they're concerned, we're the horses. Who do you think is driving this thing?" I asked my friend Steve Downing what he knows about banking.
For starters, a banking riddle. Question: what's the difference between a trampoline and a banker? Answer: you take your shoes off to jump on a trampoline. Actually, some of my best friends are bankers, and that's true. In fact, one of my oldest friends is a banker. We met in grade school and are still close. He doesn't go to work every day anymore. His kids are pretty much in charge now. But in his family, you have a desk at the bank until you cannot remember how to get there. I could never be a banker. Banking is all about risk. I have no appetite for risk. And honestly, my good friend and his family don't have much appetite for risk either. And that has informed their banking decisions for over 100 years. They've done very well, being very careful. But anytime you loan money to someone, there's always the risk that things might go haywire. You could lose the whole bundle, including all prospective interest. Banking as we know it evolved in the 14th and 15th centuries in Renaissance Italy. But its origins are in the ancient world, in Greece and Rome, for example, where moneylenders were based in the temples. That predated the still nominal separation of church and state, so occasional conflict of interest never caught anybody's oversight eye for long. Our word bank is from the old Italian banca, meaning table. Renaissance bankers did their business on tables covered by green tablecloths. There were no banks that would be recognizable to us today until the 1700s. Perhaps predictably, the United States now has the most banks in the world, 5,330 and counting, with 81,000 plus branches. Isn't it comforting to know that in our country, there's a bank building for every 3,000 of us? Discovered records on clay of interest-bearing loans date back to 1750 BC. This, despite the fact that the Bible proscribes lending money at interest. It was called usury, a sin. That was eventually conveniently deemed archaic, and as banking developed in the temple, the biblical sin came to be understood as lending money at excessive interest. Then it was all good, and that's where we are now. For context, there's no ancient or Renaissance record of anything like a naked credit default swap, one of the banking tools that caused the collapse of Bear Stearns in 2008, and a tool that George Soros thinks should be banned. Soros knows what he's talking about. I don't. But to me, when you see the word naked modifying a term like credit default swap, it is high time to retool the toolbox.
My name is Tom Cranker, and I'm a jolly banker. I'm a jolly banker, am I? I safeguard the farmers and widows and orphans, singing I'm a jolly banker, am I? When dust storms are sailing and crops they are failing, I'm a jolly banker, am I? I check up your shortage and bring down your mortgage, singing I'm a jolly banker, am I? When money you're needing and mouths you are feeding, I'm a jolly banker, am I? I plaster your home with that furniture alone, singing I'm a jolly banker, am I? If you show me you need it, I'll let you have credit. I'm a jolly banker, am I? Just bring me back two for the one I lend you, singing I'm a jolly banker, am I? When your car you're losing, sadly you're cruising, I'm a jolly banker, am I? I'll come out for clothes, get your car and your clothes, singing I'm a jolly banker, am I? Bugs get your cotton, times they are rotten. I'm a jolly banker, am I? I'll come down and help you, I'll rape you and scalp you, singing I'm a jolly banker, am I?
Billy Bragg and Wilco with a song from Woody Guthrie, only on Northern Community Radio, KAXE, KBXE. Thanks to Steve Downing for contributing to today's show, and thanks to the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for helping us support and broadcast the work of Minnesota writers heard on this and other local programs. Coming up, we'll talk with Michelle Nar-Obed about the decision she and three others made this week to bear witness at the Enbridge Pipeline. But first, here's a new song by The Killers that I think Woody Guthrie might have liked. It's the soundtrack to a new video by Spike Lee, and I hope you have a chance to watch it the next time you listen to this song, Land of the Free.
Can't wipe the windblown smile from across my face. It's just the old man in me washing his truck at the Sinclair station in the land of the free. His mother, Adeline's family, came on a ship, cut coal and planted a seed down in them drift mines of Pennsylvania, in the land of the free.
Land of the free.
Land in the land of the free.
Land of the free. Land of the free. Land of the free. Land of the free. In the land of the free.
When I go out in my time out on the avenue.
Land of the free. Land
in the land of the free.
Land of the free. Land of the free.
Move on, there's nothing to see.
Land of the free. In the land of the free.
I'm standing. Problem with guns.
Don't stand who will. on earth. The wind comes in four corners, four directions, four colors. And death rides on four horsemen, a black snake with some black tank. How much money do these companies need to make? They could drop their product, but they wanna save a buck. Already extracted billions, when is enough enough? I used to be in the oil fields, getting paid. But I quit, cause oil water I can't drink. Look down and see Kamimi Ladai in the mud. I looked up and told myself that enough's enough. Money does not own my soul, living comfortable. It's not in my plans, my hands in the sand. Some things worth more than gold. Some things they can't be sold. Some things can't be replaced. She is your mother, the fresh water is her veins. What is going on? Have we all lost our minds? Every human needs clean water to survive.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be called.
Martin County Sheriff's Department.
Hi, I need to report an assault.
Okay, where did it occur at?
Standing Rock. There are innocent, unarmed people being attacked with water and militia-style police firing at point-blank range with high-powered mace on unarmed people. Who protects the people?
Ma'am, yeah, if there's police there, then it has
to be. The police are the ones attacking innocent, unarmed people. So what do we do to stop the police literally hitting people at point-blank range in the face? People can lose eyes. People are going to get hypothermia. People could die. We have elders here. We have children here. We have all ages here. Nobody is armed except for the police. Who protects the people from the police?
Well, I guess if you want to put it up the chain of command, the next person to talk to would be the governor's office.
Love is the strongest, this path is the hardest. But if we weren't strong enough to do it, we wouldn't see it. Our prayers would not be needed, this movement's very needed. Indigenous wisdom unheeded and sacred things depleted. I'm Mexicano, Malacota, and I'm white too. I'm mixed with everyone, so part of me's just like you. Every group of human beings shares the same stars. And if the earth is not your mother, are you from Mars? Since 1492, 500 years and counting, surviving the genocide they call colonizing my turtle island. What is a fossil fuel? Continued destruction, nothing new. Living a system, taking our children, shipping their feelings till nothing's true. I had that money in front of me, but I left it. Cause oil money's dirty if my mother gets disrespected. We're disconnected, these times are hectic and feeling heavy. But still we love all living beings and suffer for the many. We are peaceful people, that's why we walk with prayer. And if that wasn't true, we wouldn't be standing here. We're peaceful people, we walk with prayer. Turtle Island, have no fear. Despite what they show in the media, we're kind people, hold your ground. Change is coming now.
A Tribe Called Red, their Black Snake anthem. It was almost exactly 2 years ago that the prayer camp at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation was raided and busted up, and soon after, oil started to flow through the Dakota Access Pipeline. Some of those water protectors are in prison now, but they know that thousands more are outside and are continuing in hundreds of different ways the same fight. Water protectors gather in Canada, in Minnesota, in Pennsylvania, along the Missouri River and elsewhere, and Native leadership is carrying forward the lessons and tactics, the skills and the prayers of Standing Rock. The oil still flows and the corporations still rule, but the fight has led in all kinds of unexpected directions. For instance, in Seattle, in Los Angeles, and elsewhere, successful campaigns to divest from Wells Fargo, in part because of its financial stake in the Black Snake, have now transformed into citizen movements figuring out together where to put the money instead, especially public money. And people are remembering how 100 years ago in North Dakota, a public bank was formed to meet the needs of farmers and working people. And that's just one of the really uncountable ways that the waves continue to radiate from Standing Rock in all directions across all the issues. Think for a moment about the people, children, some of them teenagers, grandparents. Think of those who spent weeks and months at Standing Rock in the protest. Think of how their lives were changed by it and all the ways they might be carrying that into their actions now, and how their example has influenced thousands more. We don't know how it'll play out at any of the pipelines developing around the country, including the Enbridge Line 3 through northern Minnesota. We do know that people who are against it are not going away. I spoke this week with Michelle Nahr Obed. After she had spent a night in Itasca County Jail, she's one of the four who trespassed onto Enbridge property last Monday to stop the flow of oil. I asked her what they intended in planning and executing this action.
What we're trying to do is to recognize that this climate change is really at a dangerous level, and that we know from, you know, a number of scientific reports, as well as just kind of common sense and watching how things are unfolding with our climate, to know that we don't have a whole lot of time left. That this danger is very imminent, and it's very real. And so, our hope is that we will get off of all fossil fuel, and we will, by doing that, we'll open up the door to allowing these new clean and sustainable technologies to come forward. And we know that they're there. I mean, we know many, many people who are working in these fields with these technologies and are ready to go. There's just not the political will to let them have a foot in the door. Our hope is that we will eliminate fossil fuel, and particularly this fossil fuel, the tar sands oil. It's the deadliest of all the oils. In its extraction, it emits the most carbon dioxide in both extraction and in the pumping of it to the refineries. And so, it was not a beef against any one particular line. It's a hope that we can turn the whole thing off. And so, we just picked that line, that site was representative of this industry, and it's in our backyard.
Michelle is one of the four who call themselves the Four Necessity Valve Turners. They broke the law of trespassing, taking a bolt cutter to the Enbridge fence, padlocking the fence back up behind them, and attempting to shut off a valve on the pipeline. Once they were on the property, though, they called Enbridge and told them what they intended to do and where they were, because they wanted to make sure that they didn't cause any kind of an accident. They realized it would be much safer if the pipeline was shut down from a control station, which is exactly what Enbridge did. Miles from where the valve turners themselves were still examining the safety cap on the actual valve. The other thing Enbridge did right away, of course, was call the local sheriff's department. Later, our state representative said that what these protesters had done was dangerous, a threat to public safety. I'm not sure if she meant that having the pipeline shut down for an hour was a danger to the people on the other end, or what exactly. Certainly, the safety record of nonviolent resistance is a lot better than the safety record of pipelines. I think maybe the danger that she was referring to was the political danger of people choosing to disobey the law. Michelle describes for us what happened once the sheriff arrived.
First sheriff or police from the sheriff's department arrived, and he was fine with just approaching us, recognizing that we were nonviolent. He didn't feel threatened. We made sure right from the beginning that he knew that we were nonviolent and that we posed no threat at all, that we had come there for a specific reason of taking our responsibility to heal the earth from this poison that was pumping through her belly for all these years, and it was time to give it a break. And so anyhow, he recognized that. We made that clear pretty much right away. The second police officer showed up with his gun drawn, and he said he wanted to see all of our hands. And so we immediately put our hands up, and the first police officer said, "Put that thing away." And he said, I want to see all their hands up. And then the other police officer said, "Would you please put that thing away?" And so he did. We introduced ourselves. We got his name and told him our names so that we could try to humanize this situation and allay any fears that he might have had as well. Then, you know, they wanted us to come out immediately, and we had relocked ourselves in, and we said that we were wanting to have the oil turned off for as long as possible, and that we knew as soon as we came out that, you know, they would begin the process of turning it back on. So we said that we could not come out. The first police officer then said he would call for bolt cutters, and, you know, looked at the lock, asked us why we couldn't come out. We didn't have the key. And he called for bolt cutters. The second police officer saw that the bolt cutters were on the inside of the fence and asked us for them. And we said, "I'm sorry, we can't give them to you. We want to be in here as long as we possibly can to keep the oil off." And so he then said, "Well, what if I was to draw my gun and hold that on you and demand that you give me the bolt cutters?" So I said, "Do you really want to shoot any of us for the bolt cutters? Would you really do that?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Well, then what's the point? Put your hands back in your pocket. Get them warm." He had no gloves on. "Take our glove warmers. Don't worry about holding a gun. We're not going to give you the bolt cutters at this point." And then he looked back and forth, and he said, "Well, all right, I'm going to climb over the fence, and I'll get them." And there were three levels of barbed wire on the fence, and he wasn't in the best of the shape, and he was very cold. And I saw his hands going up for the barbed wire, and I knew he was going to get cut. And I said, "Okay, Mark, please come down. Just come down. Just stop." And so he came down, and I said, "We'll give you the bolt cutters. We don't want to see you get hurt." And so he took the bolt cutters, and he then opened up the gate, and that was, and then we came out.
How much time elapsed between the time you called Enbridge to tell them you were going to do this?
Yeah, it's hard to. Time went by in a different. We were in a different space in our mind, so it's very hard for me to even estimate how much time went by. But I think we could have been in there an hour before they arrived, and maybe around that time, because it was maybe about 15 minutes after they arrived that the whole thing took place with them cutting the lock off and us leaving. Time was very abstract at that point. That's what I'm going to guess. It was about an hour and a half total from the time we called to the time we left.
That's Michelle Nahr-Obed, one of the valve turners arrested this week for their action at the Enbridge pipeline. She asked me to make clear that the authorities acted professionally and responsibly, that they never felt they were in any physical danger or their rights ignored. The four of them were brought into court the next day for bail hearings. As with all Itasca County prisoners brought to the courtroom, they had their ankles chained and their wrists shackled to a broad leather belt. It is quite a piece of theater in those orange jumpsuits. Doesn't have a lot to do with safety, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, they were, one at a time, brought into Justice McBroom's courtroom, respectful and calm, glad to see the couple of dozen friends and supporters who were there, to see them get released on their own recognizance, on condition of remaining law-abiding and having no contact with Enbridge or its property. They will be back, the four of them, on February 19th for their arraignment, at which time, as I understand it, they will plead innocent to the two charges against them: misdemeanor trespassing, and aiding and abetting destruction of Enbridge property, which is a felony that carries a potential 5-year prison term.
You know, I'm not a big fan of going to prison. I've been there before. It's not an easy place to be, but it's also, well, there's many ways that I can look at it. One is that I can offer up that sacrifice as a way of hoping that that sacrifice is recognized and will and will be a kind of a salvation in some way. That I also can recognize a little bit more clearly what Jesus might have been feeling as he was walking to the cross, walking to his crucifixion, carrying his cross after all that he had been through. I am a Catholic, and as a Catholic, I do believe in the resurrection, and that resurrection, I can only experience that resurrection if I experience the cross. So there's that component. Then there's also the component of, you know, there's a whole list of acts of mercy that we are called to do. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was homeless, you housed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me drink. When I was in prison, you visited me. When I was sick, you cared for me. And what you did for the least of these, you have done for me. So that's where Jesus is. He's always been with the marginalized and the poor. That's how he came into the world. And so I have this opportunity to be closer to that whole other dimension, if I choose to look at it that way, which is about the only way I can look at it, because otherwise the whole thing really sucks of going to jail. And the other thing is that we do live in a society that is basically in minimum security anyhow, so we're not as free as we think we are, even out here in the so-called free world. So that's how I deal with the possibility of going to jail. It's not something I look forward to or think it's really cool to go to jail. I don't. I don't think anybody should be in jail. I think it's I think our system is punitive, and there's way too many people making profits on keeping more and more people incarcerated. So this is crazy. And do I think, you know, this is something that anybody should be facing? No, absolutely not. But if I have to face it, then I face it with my faith that it means something somewhere.
Because the four face felony charges, they will have an opportunity to mount what is known as a necessity defense, meaning they're innocent not because they didn't do it, but because they had to do it to stop a greater harm. Their lawyers will call expert witnesses speaking to climate change and to the defendant's motivations, which will all be part of the court record. This necessity defense is why the group calls itself the Four Necessity Valve Turners. You can find out more about it by searching for them, numeral 4 Necessity MN. And I suppose that website is where they will post the schedule of appearances and hearings leading up eventually to a jury trial at Itasca County Courthouse. Based on the turnout at the courthouse this week, I'm guessing that could be a pretty crowded courtroom. Because it is a jury trial, a lot will depend on the selection of and instructions to the local jurors. I asked Michelle about local opinion. One of the comments to one of the news stories about your arrest was this one: lock them up and throw away the key.
Mm-hmm.
They are eco-terrorists and need to be treated as the evil vermin they are.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised. I mean, you know, I'm not surprised that people would have written that kind of stuff. I don't think it's a personal. I don't take it personally. Either they're trying to, right off the bat, set a tone for us. People call them trolls. They troll through through news stories, and then they make sure that they get out the worst slant as possible to set the tone. Or maybe they were people that work at the pipeline and felt like, you know, we were trying to take away their livelihoods. I'm not surprised at all, and I don't take it personally, and I hope that as all of this begins to unfold more, that they will understand that this is for all of us, for them and their children and their future generations, for their water, for their food, for their life sustenance, that for the common good. I hope that, you know, through other interviews that they may hear, or if they were to come to the trial with their local folks, that they would hear more where we're coming from, and maybe they would think differently in the end. Maybe they won't. It's their prerogative, but what's that phrase? You can please some of the people some of the time, but you can't please all of the people all the time. That's, yeah. It's clear that we're only a small part of a long, wide chain of people and movements and organizations that are fighting for our common, for the common good, of people of goodwill that have taken, you know, like necessary and very intense action for the common good. We're just a piece of it. We're not, what we did is not the only way, the right way, the only right way. It's, we're just a piece of this energy that seems to be flowing from around the world, and all we're doing is adding our energy to that energy in hopes that we can overcome the negative energy that keeps us in this kind of like hell that we're developing and living in, even with all the beauty that has been given us, we've got to stop destroying it, and so we just want to be a part of that.
That's Michelle Nahr Obed, one of the four necessity valve turners. The four of them are all members of the Catholic Workers Movement, which for generations has been equipping and supporting people called to conscience.
We operate under certain principles, and we're guided by certain messages and principles and tenets. And they include the Sermon on the Mount. They include the social justice teachings. We're not part of the Catholic Church, and we're not the church people, nor are we Catholic Charities. But our guidance comes from the great faith-based teachings, social justice teachings, which are not owned by Catholics or Christians. Like, I've been a part of many interfaith actions, and when we listen to each other, we see those principles running through all of the great faiths and spiritual traditions. So they are universal. And Catholic worker, Catholic means in with the small c, means universal. So it's very much like an outer expression of that universality of a God, a creator, that runs through us and amongst us, teaching us these things of how to live right with each other, how to live right with Creator, how to live right with our creation. And so, like, in studying that, in reading and in prayer and in interfaith gatherings and in friendships that we form with people from other traditions other than Christianity, we kind of deepen that spiritual understanding, and then out of that you eventually come to a place of like, okay, well, how do I make these teachings, how do I make my body be a vessel for these teachings, how do I be a vessel to have these teachings become real in our world right now? And so many of us, the four of us that came together, have like prayed together, have meditated on these things together, have worked with our own spiritual development separately, and then come together and believe that, like, the spirits, the ancestors, the spirits, the saints, the witness, cloud of witnesses, all those have come before us, have gone before us, are with us and guiding us, and and this is was a calling. It wasn't anything but a calling, really. And we tried to take away as much of the like political or intellectual part of this, and just look very deeply at our faith and where our spirit was calling us and where our God was calling us to be. And then we went forward. This is what came out of it. This is what we envisioned. This is what was put into our hearts when we listened with the ear of our heart. This is what came into our hearts to do. And the intention and the way we not only, you know, attempted to turn off the valve, but in addition to doing all of that, we left sacred objects that we brought with us. So they were everything from like Buddhist prayer ties to Ojibwe tobacco ties to rosaries and medallions of saints and the UN report that was done by all of the scientists recently, the book written by Pope Francis about our common home and our obligation to our common home. We left all of these things hanging on the fence and on the valve itself, in hopes that when we can finally get this out away from us, we can finally get this behind us, this dependency on fossil fuel. When we can get that behind us and open up the door for these new technologies that are for the common good, for our common home, that work would have to come, that hard work would have to come from the spirits that we called in to that space that will continue working on the hearts and minds of people. We didn't do this in judgment of anyone that is trying to like make a living with this industry. We know that people need work and need just wages. We also do too. I work as well. I know what it means to, you know, have to depend on a job for your bread and butter and trying to do the best for your family. So we didn't come in judgment of that. What we want people to know that's not the only work that's available. This other work, there's so much work that could be done with these technologies. There's so many opportunities for so many people, and it's like just allowing it to find its place in our society and go for those jobs. So anyhow, it's those saints and angels and ancestors and cloud of witnesses that will have to work on the hearts and minds of all of us so that we can finally come together for the common good instead of our own personal interests.
Michelle Nahr Obed. For their website, search the numeral 4 Necessity MN.
Creatures young and grown,
called by
my storm.
Mercy for mercy the people.
For the people.
Old ways.
Old ways.
New dreams.
New dreams. Reborn.
Songwriter Annie Humphrey, backed up there by John Trudell. I'm Michael Goldberg. I'm a volunteer here at Northern Community Radio, where I get to produce this program every week. A lot of my friends and people I respect are devout and faithful secularists, confident in their knowledge that the physical universe is pretty much what it seems to be and no more, and that what we don't understand about it is ultimately knowable. And at the same time, more than a few of my neighbors are fundamentalists, confident in their knowledge that they are fulfilling God's purpose and that those who disagree with them are godless, must be saved or at least stopped. I suspect that people on both ends of that spectrum are liable to misunderstand me when I say we are living in prophetic times. It's not just climate change or the mass extinction of species or the chaos caused by millions of people being forced to flee their homes, all of these products of the three poisons, greed, hatred, and delusion. We're living in a time of blindness and a time of prophecy. They usually do go together. It's a mistake to think of prophecy as a kind of prediction. It's more like a kind of prescription, an antidote to the poisons. The biblical prophets all have the same reaction to their spiritual visions. They always say to God, "Oh no, you got the wrong guy, not me. Find someone else to do it." And this reaction is vital to the teaching because we all have that same impulse to keep our heads down, to deny any sight or insight that refutes and contradicts the commonly accepted order of things. But those biblical prophets had no choice, and they fulfill the real purpose of prophecy, not to predict, but to interrupt, interfere, overcome the blindness. A prophetic social movement, what seems to be gathering outside the knowledge of any headlines, is not about climate change or water pollution or treaty rights or poverty or racism. Those are all gears in the same machine. Ta-Nehisi Coates, the author of Between the World and Me, his meditation on race in America, ends his book with this. Plunder has matured into habit and addiction. The people who could author the mechanized death of our ghettos, the mass rape of private prisons, and then engineer their own forgetting must inevitably plunder much more. This is not a belief in prophecy, but in the seductiveness of cheap gasoline. The earth is not our creation. It has no respect for us. It has no use for us. And its vengeance is not the fire in the cities, but the fire in the sky. So says Ta-Nehisi Coates. I say, we live in times of prophecy and blindness. Stay human. Wow. Wow.
There comes a time when we all got to speak as one. No more one man stand and shout at another one. Oh no, 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 no. With your tolerance
and